We made this. Hello and welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Tony Black, and in this episode, we're looking at the first and second episodes of Disney Plus's new MCU series, Marvel's Hawkeye. And these episodes are called Never Meet Your Heroes and Hide and Seek. And in these opening episodes, we're introduced to young Archer, Kate Bishop, played by Hayley Steinfeld, daughter of parents who built a large security company in New York, who returns to the fold only to find her widowed mother, Ellie, Vera Farmiga, engaged to the slick and charming Jack Duquesne, played by Tony Dalton. When his uncle is murdered in mysterious circumstances, after the auction of Hawkeye's Ronin suit goes explosively wrong, Kate ends up in the orbit of Clint Barton himself, played by Jeremy Renner, her childhood hero, who just wants to get back to his family home for Christmas. And joining me to discuss these first two episodes of Hawkeye is my guest, regular Podcast 616 host and guest, and writer and editor of framerated.co.uk, Dan Owen. Dan, it's nice to be back with you. We last did Black Widow, I think, for P616.
We did, yeah. That was in the summer, wasn't it? Seems like a long time ago now. Such a lot has happened in the Marvel Universe. It's like there's a new film and a new series every month, it seems. So, this is like almost a follow-up to that in some ways, isn't it? Black Widow. This will be an interesting one.
Yeah, there's a lot of connective tissue. Since your last one, I think, was a great episode with Darren Mooney on Eternals, which is a very, very different beast, but that was a really good conversation. And we're now... yeah, heading back to what I suppose is a bit more back to basics, ground level MCU, like Black Widow was to some extent with Hawkeye. This is, in many ways, this is kind of about as grounded as it gets nowadays for this franchise, isn't it?
Yeah. Eternals was really heavy, wasn't it, on the mythology and all this kind of thing, and changing your understanding of the whole universe of Marvel, but this is taking things right back down to street level again. So it's kind of I think it's worth doing that from time to time because it gets a bit too crazy, doesn't it? Otherwise, especially after Loki was very much a big ideas kind of show, and WandaVision had a huge mystery behind it, and this is a bit more like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I suppose, a little bit more grounded.
You can't have Harry Styles rocking up with a green troll every week, can you? Really?
Well, there's still time. There's still more episodes. You never know what might happen.
That's true, actually. At the MCU now, the stage it's at, anything's possible. So, who knows? But what we're going to do in this chat, we're obviously going to cover these first two episodes, and we're going to talk about each one in turn, and we're going to go through. And then we'll have a little break in the middle and then finish up. So let's start by talking about the... not so much the pilot, but episode one, because it doesn't really work that way with pilots these days with these shows. So episode one, Never Meet Your Heroes, written by Jonathan Igler, who's the overall sort of creative showrunner of the series, and directed by Rhys Thomas. And this one is the one that reintroduces Hawkeye, I guess, introduces Kate Bishop. So what did you think generally of Never Meet Your Heroes, and give us a score out of 10, Dan?
Well, generally speaking, I really enjoyed it. I like the Netflix Marvel shows that existed, or at least I liked Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and that this felt very much in line with that, and I kind of I just enjoy like a normal story, really, because Marvel gets a bit crazy at times, and we've definitely had some films recently that have taking us down, like I say, the wacky mythology kind of aspects of the universe. But I kind of like it when it gets back down to basics, just kind of focuses on the characters, tells an interesting story, you know, you have your MCU type stuff here and there, you know, especially the kind of origin story that we got for Kate Bishop with the flashback to 2012 and the Battle of New York and stuff. So there's always a little bit of that, but fundamentally this is like kind of like a grounded story. You know, it didn't really have to even be an MCU story in some ways. You could easily have swapped out some characters and just made this a different type of story. So yeah, I enjoyed it, and out of 10 for the first episode, probably, I don't know, like a solid 7.5, you know? I don't want to go too much higher than that. I think 7.5 is fair.
Yeah, no, I'd say about 7. Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think what I was surprised about, quite pleasantly surprised in a way, was how steady it all felt, really. It wasn't too... There was stuff going on. You know, there were introductions and plots, you know, in there. But there wasn't a vast amount of stuff happening all the time. You know, there was quite a little bit of time devoted to, you know, Hawkeye just chilling out with his family, really, with his children. You know, you had Kate's interactions with her mom and things like that. And like you say, a few little flashbacks. And really, the only real strings of what you would call the narrative itself tend to come in towards the end, once you have the big auction scene in the middle. And it's not like, there's not a ton of plot necessarily to Hawkeye at this stage. There's not a hundred things going on that you've got to keep up with. And I think that was quite refreshing, really. It was quite nice to be able to just come into something where you've got one character who, if you're a comics fan, you're going to know who Kate Bishop is, probably. But if you're not, you've got a new character to come into. Is quite a strong character, I think, to start with. And then you've got a very recognisable, you know, OG MCU character. And I think it all just is quite a nice, relaxed kind of thing. And I was pleasantly surprised by that, because, and I'm not saying this is a criticism, because a lot of the MCU stuff, you know, I really enjoy. But so often you really get thrown a ton of things. I mean, look at something like Loki. You know, straight away with Loki, there's loads of things you've got to keep up with, loads of mythology, loads of stuff going on. Even Falcon and Winter Soldier, there's quite a lot of things in there, in the pot, whereas it wasn't the case with this first episode of Hawkeye. And so, yeah, I like that. I thought that was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I think that's just strength of writing, really, isn't it? As you mentioned there, you've got Jonathan Eagler writing this, who's obviously worked on Mad Men and Masters of Sex, and I think Bridgerton as well is something that he worked on. So he's obviously coming from a strong background of writing, not necessarily somebody who's particularly attached to superhero type stuff. You know, he's obviously got an interest in that, or he wouldn't be involved with this. But so maybe it's just that he brings all that to it. You know, just sometimes you get that with just general TV shows, don't you? Sometimes the pilots and premieres of certain things just hook you straight away, and it's usually just down to strength of writing. There's you can sort of detect a kind of confidence to what you're watching, you know, and you kind of subconsciously pick up on that, and you kind of along for the ride. And I think you kind of got that with this opening episode.
Yeah, I felt there was a confidence. I agree there. I think that's the case. And you're absolutely right about Eagler. You know, I mean, you can't get much of a stronger pedigree than something like Mad Men. So, you know, and the other things he's done have been either critically acclaimed or very successful. So it's quite, in many ways, he's quite a signing, isn't he? You know, it's only like one step away from getting, you know, Matthew Weiner to come and do a Marvel show this. So it's quite a pedigree creative here, isn't he, doing a Marvel show?
Yeah. Maybe they'll get more people like that. I think there's lots of people who are fans of the MCU that you don't expect them to be, like Paul Anderson, you know, who's done Boogie Nights and things. He's a big fan, isn't he, and stuff. So there's probably a lot of people who are seen as more highbrow who actually... do enjoy this kind of thing. So maybe we'll get David Chase doing a Daredevil series or something, you know.
You are psychic, because literally I was going to say that exact same thing. And you know what? If David Chase teamed up with Brian Michael Bendis and decided to have a crack at some of the mid-2000s Daredevil stuff, it would be amazing, because that Daredevil run is fabulous, and it is basically the Godfather. So yeah, I mean, imagine. I mean, who knows? It would be incredible. You've got me now wanting to see a PTA 70 set Marvel movie. Can you imagine? Marvel by way of Inherent Vice. I'd be well up for that. Yeah. That'd be brilliant. Nick Fury, do a young Nick Fury series with PTA in the 70s. I'd be well up for that. But anyway, we should probably talk about shows that exist, like Hawkeye. I mean, without going into too many sort of areas of the the primer covered last time. How do you feel about the character of Hawkeye then, Clint Barton? You know, in the MCU, in that what we've seen so far, because obviously this first episode, and probably I think the two texts from Clint's journey in the past that I think this series is going to lean heavily into is the Joss Whedon Avengers Assemble in 2012, and then Avengers Endgame, both of which maybe have Hawkeye in some of his most significant roles in the MCU. So, you know, what's your association with this character? Do you have much investment in him as a character? Do you think that where we come into this show, there's a lot of meat to chew on here with this guy?
Well, yeah, I've listened to the primer before this episode, and I kind of agree with a lot of what was said there. I mean, I don't think he's very few people's favourite character, you know, because you're always going to be naturally drawn to the more superheroic ones, aren't you, with special powers and abilities and stuff. And, you know, and his ability as a keen archer has never been, it's never really been described as a superpower, even in the sense that he's, like, particularly good at other types of aiming, if that makes sense. Like, you've got Bullseye, haven't you, as well, in the Marvel Universe, and he's very much set up to be somebody who's like able to throw anything and hit the bullseye, you know. So, but with Clint Barton, I've never really got that feeling that it's just that he's particularly good at a bow and arrow. So I don't think he's like anyone's favorite. He was never one of my favorites, but I think that's the challenge of this series, isn't it? Is to take a character like that who may not be somebody that you're particularly keen to watch a whole series about and make it your favorite series. Hopefully, it's a challenge there. And I think this is off to a decent start, to be honest. And, I mean, similar to Black Widow, you could argue as well. I don't think that's a character that, a huge amount of people were screaming out for a film, beyond the fact that obviously it was a female character, and we do kind of desperately need that in the MCU for a bit of balance. But, you can understand why they basically put Iron Man and Thor and Captain America ahead of people like Black Widow and Hawkeye. It just kind of makes sense. You can understand that. But that's why these TV shows are so interesting to me, is that it's a chance to kind of take some of the lesser known characters or the ones that haven't quite ever been given a lot of material in the films, and to do something with them. And so you definitely kind of got that with Wanda and Vision in their series. I think I'm more interested to see what's happening with Wanda now in future films than I ever was before that series came about. So hopefully same will happen with Hawkeye, you know, and by the end of this we'll think, you know, maybe that was my favourite or second favourite of the bunch, you know. It's already on the way to that.
Yeah, the response to these first few episodes has been quite positive generally, I think, with Hawkeye. And I mean, I think, to be honest, I think the difference here is that maybe this is the right time for this project to happen, whereas with Black Widow, I think there was a general consensus that that was about 5 years too late. I mean, they literally had to set it just after Civil War, the story, for it to really fit. It came about after the character of Natasha Romanoff is dead. It was a really weird point to do it as an epilogue for Scarlett Johansson. But I think most people would agree that that film should have been made after Civil War, and it would have made a lot more sense. Whereas Hawkeye, yes, there have been, like I say, these two big points where, you know, you see him at his prime, I guess, in Avengers Assemble, and then at his lowest in Endgame when he becomes Ronin and, you know, all his family are gone and he goes to this dark place. And in the interim of that, he doesn't do a lot. You know, he pops up a little bit in Age of Ultron. If I remember rightly, he's completely absent from Civil War, mainly because he's so, like you said, he's so underpowered in many ways. It's difficult to know quite what to do with a character like that when you've got these cosmic superheroes fighting each other in an airport.
Well, he is in that film, isn't he? In that film, he's just not very memorable, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, is he in that?
In that film? Yeah, because he has at least that shot that I remember when he shoots his arrow and Ant-Man's on the end of the arrow.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah, so as I was saying that, all the listeners would go, "Shut up, Tony! He was there."
But, he was there.
So yeah. This is on me that, you know, he was. I'm going to keep this in, actually, in the podcast, because my error, because I think that's part of the point, in that he's not been super memorable in the interim between some of these projects, and he hasn't cropped up in all the things or in a lot of stuff. So I think, in a way, thank you for correcting me there, because that is important to do. But I think, in a way, You know, I'm going to make my point work, Dan. Try as I might, I'll die on I'll die on this hill.
Take another run at it. Go on.
I'm going to have another run at it. I think having this happen maybe after Endgame, after he's been through this, in that he's trying to get back to the family that he's always sort of been trying to get back to in a lot of these films, and he's the you know, one of the few characters. In fact, he might be the only superhero main character that we've seen who has a proper functional family dynamic. You know, people like, you know, Ant-Man have a daughter, and these, you know, there are kids flying around out there and relatives, but your Clint is the only one who's really had this secure family structure to get back to. So I think it makes sense in a way that you might do a Hawkeye series at this point. So when he's got that aspect going on, and also as we see in when he's watching Rogers the Musical, and this is something I think will definitely creep in later in this series, he is haunted by the deaths of these people that he cared about, you know, particularly Natasha. And I think it might be a good space to explore those things after all this stuff has happened. I got there, Dan. I did it. I made my point.
You did it.
Did it work?
Yeah, no, yeah. It worked, yeah. Like you say, he's not always particularly memorable in certain films, definitely. But yeah, he's had his moments. Definitely Endgame was a good one. But yeah, it's always worth having a character like him who is kind of not a superhero, because you can kind of invest more easily in that kind of a character. He's somebody who's just a normal guy, essentially, who's got a family. You know, some of the other characters, it's a little bit trickier to totally buy into them, you know, on the level of a peer, you know, like even Spider-Man's kind of set up to be like an ordinary kid, etc. But he's still an ordinary kid dealing with superpowers, which I don't have to deal with that in real life. Even
really?
If I was a teenager, yeah. So no, you'd be surprised to hear. So, but at least with Clint Barton and Black Widow, you know, they're both just normal people. You know, I could go out and spend 20 years learning how to fire a bow and arrow.
Are you going to? Is this what Hawkeye's going to inspire in you, Dan?
Well, that's it, yeah. I think, yeah, you know, Kate Bishop, you know, I'm going to follow her lead, I think, and dedicate. Yeah, I'm leaving it quite late in life, you know, I'll reach my peak with this when I'm 50, probably. So, yeah.
Well, that's about Jeremy Renner's age, so, you know, that fits.
Yeah, it fits. Yeah, I can do it.
You can do it. Obviously, a big inspiration for this particular approach has been a comic run that started in 2012, went on to 2015 by artist David Ayer and writer Matt Fraction, which was a run that very much holds true to a lot of what we see on screen, or rather the other way around. The series holds true to that comic approach, which is Clint with Kate Bishop. And there's lots of aspects from that comic. I don't know if you've read this comic, Dan, and I haven't read all of it, but I've read a bit of it, that have been borrowed for this show. So there is a clear inspiration for everything from the tracksuit mafia to, you know, the use of bro, to so even some of the set pieces that maybe we haven't got to all of them yet, but in the trailer there's a shot of a car chase and Kate's sort of out of the window and she's firing a bow and arrow. And in the third issue, there's a very similar kind of set piece in that. And in that, Hawkeye has this range of amazing arrows that can do all these kinds of different things. You know, an exploding arrow, a sticky arrow, and all these kind of things. So, you know, in terms of gadgets, there's lots of almost James Bondian kind of things. And in fact, Fraction said that some of the inspiration for some of the stories, there's one a bit later on about how they have to recover a tape of an assassination, and that has very Bondian strains. And he said he wanted to go down that road. But what they've done, I think, with this series is fuse that particular very stripped back run. I mean, it's very playful, it's quite comic, it's very MCU, because it's the intention was to, at that point, to bring Hawkeye back after the success of Avengers Assemble and kind of reintroduce him into the comics lexicon. So they did that, and they made it very MCU comic flavored, but they fused that with some of the earlier Ultimates comics that have some of Hawkeye's backstory and some of the narrative ideas in play there. And they've kind of, because one of the things in the Fraction series that isn't here is there is a flirtatious aspect between him and Kate. And she seems a little bit older in that run than she is in this. And the dynamic is slightly different. It's this mentor, but also maybe they actually want to sleep together. Whereas that isn't the case, obviously, in this show. So because he, in that run, he doesn't really have the family to go back to. So there are aspects of that that have had to been adapted, but they've brewed it all together with where Hawkeye is coming from in the MCU. And it's quite an interesting inspiration point there. And it's a very clear text that they've gone back to.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not somebody who reads the comics. I think I've mentioned on pretty much every podcast 616 things I've ever done. I'm not a big comics reader, really. I prefer it that way, in a sense, because similar to when I was watching Game of Thrones, I didn't want to have things ruined for me by reading the books at the same time that the TV show was on. So what I tend to do is if I'm interested in a certain element or I'm not too sure who a character is, I do a little bit of Googling, you know, just kind of work out. But even then, I'm kind of cautious with too much spoilers. I just like to have a little bit of an idea where things might be going. So I'm just kind of on that level, really. So I was aware of a few things going into this that had been mentioned about, you know, the inspirations behind the series. And in general, I always think the MCU films are generally at their best when they are taking direct inspiration with characters and storylines and stuff like that. Sometimes it's the more original things that are the weak links. So yeah, so this is probably a good aspect, you know, to this series, that you've got that foundation, you know, to build on. Similar to WandaVision, obviously, was kind of inspired by a few things, and that was obviously probably one of my favourites. And I think Loki was less so, wasn't it? If at all, I'm not too sure. I don't think I was directly inspired, was it, by anything? Maybe just a few things here and there, but like with the Lady Loki aspect and things. But yeah, but I mean, this one, like you say, it seems like it's pulling directly from a, you know, a good story, you know, and so it's kind of it's always good when they manage to combine things together with obviously some of their own ongoing MCU concerns and in an interesting way. So even people who've hopefully read the comics can still get something out of this, and there's still going to be changes and surprises along the way.
Yeah, and I think there will be, because I don't think... really, the first two or three issues of... Particularly the first two issues of that comic deal with particular characters that we're seeing so far in this show. And then it very much sort of does what these comics do, and it tends to go off and does different mini arcs. So like issues 4 and 5 are involving Madripoor and S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff that we're not going to see in this show. So it's taking certain aspects, and then it's definitely going to go down. And in the comics, there's nothing like with the Hulk with their own Ronin suit and anything like that. So they're definitely going their own way. It's not a direct, complete adaptation, which is good, you know, and they can't do it that way anyway, because the MCU is so different to the way things unfolded in the comics that they have got to do their own course. And they're building, obviously, on 10 plus years of history, particularly with Hawkeye, who, we, you know, has been in the MCU now for 11 years, you know. So there is a fair bit of history they've got to build on. So it is, you're right. I think having the text to work from specifically does make a difference in some of these shows. I think, and so I'm hoping that that's something that will continue for some of the future projects like She-Hulk, Moon Knight, etc. Particularly for the TV shows, because I think actually having that basis, because a lot of these comics, I mean, we joked earlier about David Chase and Daredevil, but that run of Daredevil would be an incredible adaptation if they did it, because it's genuinely great storytelling in that format. And so I think if you have that basis, it's like adapting a novel. You know, if you adapt a novel and you can do it relatively accurately, you will probably end up with a pretty good movie. Not in every case, because not all novels can be adapted straight, you know, perfectly. But if you get, it's about capturing the essence of something, I think. And they've done it with that Fraction comic, I think.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe I'll have to read it after this.
I'd recommend it. It's good. It's very good. I don't know about you, I think with Never Meet Your Heroes, I was kind of struck by how little Hawkeye was actually in it. And it was very much Kate Bishop's story. Did that surprise you in any way?
A little bit, because obviously the title of the series is Hawkeye, so you'd think it would be very much focused on him. But it kind of makes sense, because, you know, we don't know Kate Bishop at all, and there's only 6 episodes, so it seems a shame to waste one just kind of reintroducing what Clint's up to, you know, entirely, and only saving the last 5 with her involved at all. You know, so I kind of understand that. And obviously we had the origin story of her, didn't we, to start the whole thing off, which I think was necessary. So yeah, just it made sense to me. And I think Phase 4 in general with the MCU is all about introducing new people, isn't it, to kind of take over from some of the older actors who may be leaving soon. You know, in Black Widow you have Yelena, Natasha's sister, played by Florence Pugh, who is obviously going to be possibly coming back in this series, is the rumour. But yes, yeah, so she's obviously like a new addition. You've got Shang-Chi, obviously 10 different Eternals characters. So there's lots of lots of new things coming in. It just makes sense, doesn't it, to introduce another one? Because I think that's what they're doing, really, isn't it? They're just kind of laying the ground for maybe like a future Avengers film where you've got a lot of new people involved there. And some of the other characters can kind of take mentoring roles, possibly. Yeah, I don't know what exactly is going to happen with Jeremy Renner, but like we mentioned, he is now 50. So probably not going to be doing this forever at that point. So it makes sense to maybe have this be his swan song and passing the torch off to Kate Bishop. I don't know if that happens in the comics, but they could definitely do that with this story.
I think it might happen in the comics, possibly at some point. I think, or they share it, or he definitely trains her. So I think there's, yeah, I think that. I mean, there have been lots of rumors that they might be queuing up a Young Avengers movie or series by bringing in certain of the younger sort of cast members and characters that are starting to trickle in, and that Kate Bishop could be quite a significant part of that. I think that's something that might have to happen relatively quickly, because Hayley Steinfeld is in her early 20s, and I think realistically, if they want to carry the idea of them being kids or teenagers or very young, they've got to get on with that, really, and do it fairly fast, because she's not, you know, she's not a 16, 17-year-old, you know, unlike I forget her name, but the actor playing the role in the future Ironheart series, where she's, I think she might be in the second Black Panther film. She's quite younger. I think she's more like 17, I think. Or you've got Iman Vellani as Miss Marvel, you know, as Kamala Khan. She's a bit younger as well. Now, those guys maybe have a bit more, whereas Hayley Steinfeld is a little older, I think. So it's whether or not these kind of characters will come together and form that younger Avengers. Because, I mean, personally, I think that would be quite a novel way to tackle a future Avengers movie now. Because after Endgame, like, you know, there's not many places you can go anymore with this. It feels like if you're going to do it, then build it up and do something different with it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they'd call it Young Avengers. Maybe they wouldn't do that to avoid the problems of having the focus be too much on their age, you know, like, oh, look, they're all really, maybe, really young. Just call it kind of New Avengers or something. But just have everyone know that, oh, they all seem to be a lot younger than the old people, you know. And yeah, like you say, bring in lots of the younger characters. I mean, you've even got some young characters in, you got Shuri, haven't you, in Black Widow? Black Panther, who could obviously, I don't know if she's going to be taking on the mantle of Black Panther, but that's kind of rumoured as well, isn't it? So maybe she'd be the replacement there. And so there's lots of kind of like young characters already seeded around the place, isn't there, that they could kind of grab and kind of promote, essentially, to take over. So maybe that's just like the long-term plan.
And in theory, someone like Hawkeye could be a mentor in that role, you know, in that kind of film. But yeah, there's lots of possibilities. I mean, what did you think of Kate as a character then, and Hayley Steinfeld? I mean, I think she's a very good actor. I think she's been. I mean, she first really made a mark in True Grit, the remake of True Grit.
True Grit.
that's a whole different movie.
Well, that's Jeff Bridges' character. But, yeah.
Yeah, True Grit. She was great as a child actor in that Coen's movie, the remake. And since then, she's been in things like the Pitch Perfect films and various Bumblebee, and then Dickinson on Apple, which she's done quite well in. So what do you think of her and what do you think of the character of Kate so far?
Yeah, it sounds like we've got the same kind of touchstones of her career. That's the kind of films that I've seen her in, and she's definitely she's one of those actors that's been around for a while now and has never really had like a big kind of blockbuster that worked for her. I know Bumblebee was probably the closest she got, but it didn't quite click, did it, with people? So it makes sense that she's kind of latched.
It's a good film, though, that.
Yeah, yeah, it's not actually too bad. It's probably the best of the Transformers,
yeah,
isn't it?
easily.
Yeah. But so she was good in that. And but yeah, she hasn't had like a big franchise of her own. Not that that's like every actor's goal or anything, but it certainly does help your career, doesn't it, to get other projects made. So, yeah, it makes sense that she kind of latched onto this. And apparently she was the first choice as well from Kevin Feige. So he went straight to her and she agreed to it. And yeah, like you say, she's been great since she was 12 or something within True Grit. So she's kind of like an old hand, even though she's only in her early 20s. So she was really, really good. I enjoyed the character of Kate Bishop. I didn't actually know she'd be a rich person, to be honest. That was a surprise to me. So it was, like I said, I haven't read the comics. Yeah, I don't know if that's a difference from the comics. But
In the comic I read, the Fraction comic, it's not, if it's there, I missed it. to be honest. So it's not something that I picked up myself.
That's interesting, really, because that's one of my... It's not a complaint as such, but I did think it was a strange choice in a way, because it's kind of, you know, generally speaking, you have more relatable characters if they reflect most of the audience watching, and most people are not rich. So you can kind of watch Tony Stark and have that as a kind of like a fantasy, if you like. But somebody like her, she wasn't quite on that level where it's, you know, she's like a billionaire or anything, but she's definitely like, you know, upper class is what we'd call it in the UK, but wherever the equivalent is in America. So it's kind of different in that sense, having that kind of character who's wealthy and lives in a different world than most of the people watching this series. Obviously, they've made her very grounded. She didn't come across as very snobby or stuck up or anything like that, which definitely helps. You wouldn't kind of mark her out, would you, as somebody who's gone to Harvard or whatever? You know,
no.
So that helped, but it was interesting. I don't know if they've mainly done it because they needed like a wealthy family or like a powerful family as a backdrop, possibly, and they just needed that maybe, and that's what they've put her into, that world. So it's different, but you know, it's just so it's worth doing. You know, I don't think we've got many characters like that, really, where you like Peter Parker's like definitely a normal person, a bit beyond his powers, but she's definitely living in a different circle, really, or you know, in New York with that big penthouse and stuff, and her mum's obviously very wealthy, and her dad was, and so yeah, different to do that. I'll reserve judgment for now, but I was a little bit worried, you know, about how much we can connect to a character like that. But I think it works because Hayley Steinfeld's not playing it like a rich kid. She's playing it as somebody more grounded. So that certainly did work.
It's funny you should mention this, though, because I was reminded a bit of Tony Stark in a way, because I think that there is almost a similar setup. In that when we've seen the flashbacks, you know, the very awkward CGI flashbacks of Tony when he's young, when he's teenager or whatever, he's younger, in some of the previous things, you know, there are, it does feel like there are some similarities in sort of that position of an American aristocracy that you feel that maybe Ellie and certainly Jack Duquesne might be in. And that Kate, the difference obviously is that Kate doesn't have that sense of, you know, cocky entitlement that Tony did, and that long-term, you know, genius level necessarily kind of approach. But there is almost a similarity between a character who is very wealthy, who is also quite charming, and that you can get behind, in almost that she's almost like a female Tony Stark with some of the cockiness stripped away. And I kind of like that. And I think Marvel know how to do that. You know, I think they know how to, you know, and if we're looking at someone like Jonathan Igler and he's passed with some of these shows, he knows how to write that kind of world, that kind of elitist, swaggering world in many ways that someone like Jack Duquesne's from. And I think that comes off, whereas Kate, you could almost imagine Kate's sort of living in a bit of a shabby flat, you know, eating with one little slice of pizza in the fridge. You know, she's not living the life of a princess. And I think that's quite key. And I think that's why Hayley Steinfeld does work in the role, because she doesn't play the character in that way. She doesn't have that sense of arrogance to her. And I think that's why she is immediately likable. You know, I liked her straight away. I find her engaging. I think she's well-performed, well-written. I think she's a strong new character that they're bringing in, because she has a big legacy in the comics, and I think they've really done it well on the evidence of this and the second episode.
Yeah, I think you're right there to mention that she's definitely rebelling, isn't she, from her upbringing. Like you say,
yeah,
she lives in quite an impoverished kind of apartment, it looks like, nothing special, and she could definitely afford better, couldn't she? So, but for all I know, that's like $1 million apartment in New York.
<don't know>. It probably is, yeah.
Prices are so crazy there, but that kind of works. Yeah, I mean, that opening, well, one of the opening scenes where she's firing the arrow with the tennis ball on the end and destroys the clock tower. I don't know, I think that could have been done a little bit better, because I think the impression there was... Well, why was she doing that? Was it just to prove her skill with the arrow? Was it actually she wasn't intentionally trying to destroy anything, was she? So, but I don't know. I was thinking maybe there was something there. It was maybe originally had been something where she was kind of rebelling against something in that, I don't know, like some kind of ritual with that clock. I don't know. There seemed to be a bit random, that scene. I don't know if there was like something bigger that they had originally and they cut it down a little bit. because I didn't quite understand what was going on there in a sense, because there was plenty of other ways to prove her abilities with the bow and arrow. I suppose that's a bit more visual doing it that way, but I don't know. I thought maybe if she was more like destroying something that meant something to these rich people, and like, you know, it would have made more sense, and she was that would have kind of marked her out as somebody who was like kicking against the wealthy establishment, you know, in a more of a visual way. But it didn't quite work that did it, that scene. So that scene was a bit odd to me. I didn't quite get what it was going for. But yeah, like you say, though, very, very interesting character so far. And I think Hayley Steinfeld is a really good actress. You know, probably best three eyebrows, top three eyebrows in Hollywood, I think.
What have you come up with your top three then? You know, have you actually devised that top three, Dan? Because I think that's good if you have.
Top three eyebrow. well, I don't know about female eyebrows. I think Peter Capaldi's in there, aren't you?
They're good.
An eyebrow actor. You got Eugene Levy.
Yes. Excellent.
Martin Scorsese. Yeah. She's in that higher echelon of eyebrow talent, I think.
You are proving yourself as an authority on Hollywood eyebrows here, Dan. Who would have thought that was going to happen in this episode?
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I think you're right about that sequence. You know, that there are scenes maybe with those friends that she was talking to that aren't there subsequently that maybe would have been fleshed out and given us a bit more of an idea of that rebellion. Because you're right, she is rebellion. There is a general sense of rebellion, and that's, I suspect, part of the thematic idea of this. But yeah, it wasn't quite carried through in that way. She then zoomed off and focused, perhaps for the expediency of the plot, to get her to where she needs to be in that auction house, and, you know, for that key set piece in the middle, which sort of sets her off on this journey that ultimately leads to Clint. So I think they maybe had to just get on with plot a little bit more in that sense, which is that counterbalance, as I say, in this episode, because at the flip side, you've got Hawkeye, who's not really doing a lot. You know, he's in New York with his family. He's calling his wife on the phone. She's at home waiting for them to come back. And then, you know, he's just hanging out with his kids. So he, on the flip side, isn't doing much. A lot of the actual narrative stuff is driven by Kate. And it feels like really he is here in the scenes he has. They're trying to make the point that he and his character are kind of in the shadow of all of the stuff that has already happened in the MCU in the past. I think that's the point of Rogers the Musical, for one thing, which is a big joke. It's intentionally horrific to watch on stage. I mean, there's already an article flying about saying, oh, they should make Rogers the Musical for real. It's like, no, they really shouldn't, because it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you have the Hulk, it's just a guy in a green top.
Yeah. It's just, yeah.
if I'm paying Broadway prices, I want something a bit better than that.
Exactly. Yeah. You want some CGI. You know, some proper stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That all is tracks thematically with what we saw at the beginning with Kate in the middle of the Avengers Assemble events. You know, as a child, seeing the New York blown up around her dad is killed in the attack by the Chitauri and Loki's events there, and the musical, Rogers the Musical, is set around, you know, the iconic shot of the Avengers, which is the camera panning around all of the team as they're in the middle of the Battle of New York. You know, that is one of the signature, if not the signature, iconic Marvel MCU shot of all time to date. And I think that the musical is aware of that legacy. And it's obviously playing it out like, you know, Captain America going, I could do this all day and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and whereas Hawkeye is watching it and he sort of, at one point, the music sort of fades and he just sort of white noises, doesn't he, as he's looking at Natasha prancing about because he was there. Is that almost a little bit of delayed PTSD?
Yeah.
You know, in that sense that he's lost these people and that what he's watching is this horrible sort of mangling of history. And he's sitting there going, This isn't funny. This isn't a joke, you know. These people are dead.
Yeah. I took it to be that. Yeah, because he had to leave, didn't he, and go outside for a little bit. A bit of a panic attack kind of a situation. But yeah, so that's what I took it to mean. Yeah, it's become this kind of fun, you know, upbeat Broadway musical, and the reality of that for him was very different, you know. And that's probably why we had a little bit of a taste at the start of that real life sequence, so we can get a kind of memory refresher on what it was like. But it's still like always been, hasn't it? The Battle of New York's always been the more fun events that the Avengers were involved with, because Loki was a bit more of a panto villain, you know, even though there's like lots of destruction, and I'm sure, you know, thousands of people actually had died in that scenario, but it was always played as like a fun thing, wasn't it? But the future Avengers kind of adventures that they had, you couldn't really apply that to a Broadway musical, because Ultron and especially Thanos, it's not particularly the right subject matter, is it, for that? You know, it's quite a grim topic, really, and what happened. But this is probably like the only thing you can really transform into a musical. Although, to be honest, it was called Rogers, wasn't it? So for all we know, that's just like one little part of it, and the rest of it was all just tracking everything that Captain America did. So, you know, it wasn't really an Avengers musical so much.
No, my guess, it would have been an origin story for Steve. So it would have, part of that, maybe the first half of that musical was set in the war, and then it leads all the way up to, you know, him being frozen, and then the second half is maybe leading up to something like the Battle of New York, you know, this heroic,
yeah,
they did it, you know, they defeated the enemy, and that might have been the end, you know, towards the end, it, you know, yeah. That whole, we can do this all day. That would make sense for a Hollywood musical that's telling a heroic story of Captain America throughout the years, and the sort of thing that it would do, this upbeat musical story. But like you say, we you know, unless they do actually make Rogers the Musical, which I wouldn't put it past the MCU. But, you know, we won't know. But I think it's very interesting that they're doing that, though, because on the one hand, there might be a cynical argument among fans that, you know, it's just trading on all of this stuff in the past. But I think that is the key. And, you know, it's interesting when he goes to the bathroom, he sees somebody as graffitied Thanos was right on the toilet. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, then he's got a fan asking him for his, literally, when he's got his dick in his hand, there's a guy asking him for a selfie. Like, you know, yeah. And he's like, it's not really the right time. So he's a superhero that's kind of famous. You know, everybody knows who he is, but he's always been somebody who's kind of shunned it. He's not like Tony Stark, where he's embraces it in front of the cameras. He's always shunned it. He's always not wanted that life. And I think he's now haunted by that just juxtaposition, which is maybe where the MCU itself is set right now, between what we've seen happen and how it's all been presented through a certain lens, and how a character like Hawkeye, this very grounded, like you say, human character who doesn't have all these superpowers, he's not jetting off into space every 5 minutes, how he would position himself when all of this stuff has happened, when he's lost friends, when he's nearly lost his family, when he has lost his family at one point, you know, and all of these kind of things that have happened to him. And he's got that psychological scarring. This show, yes, it's sort of set in the shadow of a lot of these MCU properties in a way, and it's calling back to stuff like the Avengers, but I think that's the point. I think that's quite key, and I think it could be a very strong thematic story for Hawkeye and for Clint as a character to maybe, if he is going to pass the baton on, maybe the point of it is that he does that being comfortable in his own skin as Hawkeye, as this person who is a hero or has helped people. And I think we see a little bit more of that thematic idea in the next episode, which we'll talk about after we have a little break in a minute. But what do you think? Do you think that this show is intentionally sort of living in that haunted shadow of the MCU's own history?
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, that's the problem it's got, hasn't it? Because it needs to kind of refer back to things and to give things a sense of cohesion, and obviously it helps to have a bit of nostalgia obviously at play as well for things, you know, whilst also moving forward. So it has to always like be looking backwards and paying homage to things that it's done in the past and having some fun with that, but also doing new stuff. So this is why this episode really worked for me, because you have all the new stuff with Kate, but you've also got Clint as like the character is more of a reminder of how things have been in the past. And she's obviously got this kind of rose-tinted view of what it must be like to be an Avenger and to be Hawkeye in particular. And everyone else maybe in the world has got a bit of a rose-tinted view as well, because they've obviously, you know, only in a way only told the stories through musicals and stuff, you know. Whereas Clint's somebody who's kind of lived it, so he's kind of the reality of what it's like to have this kind of role, and especially to be somebody who's not a superhero. So for him, you know, if you jump off a building, it's a big deal, you know, because you could die from that. He can't just brush it off, you know. He has to really be thinking about his own safety. And I know in the trailer for Hawkeye, you see lots of scenes that we haven't got to yet, where he's kind of got frozen peas on his head and things. So he's somebody who really does get banged up and has to think about this. And obviously we haven't mentioned it yet, but he's lost his hearing a little bit through all the explosions and things. So he's kind of like he's got a very different perspective on what it's like to be an Avenger, and maybe part of this story in Hawkeye will be that Kate Bishop's got to kind of like learn that as well, and it's not all fun and excitement. There's actually going to be a bit of a cost to this, and maybe that she's going to have to kind of decide by the end whether or not she wants to take on the mantle, because it's not maybe as exciting as she thought originally. But I'm sure she will obviously take it, you know, because there'd be no more story if she didn't. Yeah. But she'll have to kind of like grapple with that a bit more and begin to realise throughout this 6-part story that you know, the decision to be a superhero is quite a big one.
See, I think that would be interesting. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the second part here, because I think there's a bit to delve into with Kate. But have you got any final thoughts on Never Meet Your Heroes? Is there anything else that stood out to you that you liked in this episode, or anything else you want to mention here before we move on and talk about episode 2?
Well, we didn't really mention about the Ronin suit. Do you want to mention that in this episode, or is that more for the next one?
Should we save that? Should we talk about that after the break, maybe?
Save that, yeah. Okay, we'll save that. There's a few little elements of this one that maybe, yeah, carries over into the second episode better, yeah.
I think, for me, I would say it was nice to see Simon Callow, who's a classical British actor. I was a bit sad he wasn't doing his, because he's got a very expressive English voice, you know, like that. It was a bit of a shame that he was doing an American, but he's so expressive. My wife was saying how, you know, he just every little bit of dialogue, he just rolls it off the tongue in this flurried way with that Shakespearean bent he has. So it was great to have a character like that, an actor like that here, even if it's fleeting, because obviously he's dead by the end of... Although we might see flashbacks with him, you never know, he might pop up again in some way. Yeah. Or maybe he's not really dead, you know, and it's all been faked, we just don't know at this stage. But it was good to see him, I think. You know, we need more classical British actors in Marvel, I think, definitely, going forward.
Yeah, yeah, well, we had Richard E. Grant, didn't we, in Loki.
That's true.
So they're going down the line, aren't they, of all these kind of... Very upper class actors that we have who've gone to RADA and stuff.
Bring it on.
Maybe we'll get a few more.
Yeah, let's have Ian McKellen in there. You know, Judi Dench. Let's get them all in there.
I did actually think, just mentioning about good actors and stuff in this. You had Tony Dalton as well as Jack, Kate's kind of it's not quite her stepfather yet, but he's on course to be that. So I don't know if you're aware of him from Better Call Saul.
I haven't seen Better Call Saul yet, actually, no.
Oh, right, okay. No. Yeah, okay. Well, I won't ruin it too much, but he's like one of the main villains towards the end of the series, it seems. Right. He's come into it in the past season or two. So I know him mainly from that. So to be honest, he's a lot better in that. I think the character he's got here is a little bit, I don't know what he's not doing it badly, but I don't think the character as written is that interesting at the moment. It's a bit cliched, and it's kind of too obvious that he's not the villain in a way, because they're prodding you all the time that he's definitely the villain with all these clues that he's the one who's killed his brother. But I think it obviously won't be that, because it's just too obvious, isn't it, to
probably kind
of be throwing that in the first two episodes. So yeah, I was pleased to see him, but I hopefully he gets a bit more to do, or there's a bit more to it with him, because he's a good actor, but I felt these first two episodes he was... playing a bit more of a caricature compared to everyone else around him. But I did actually think that he'd make a very good Gomez Adams. I was watching this.
He'd
be ideal casting for that.
He would. Or if they ever do a Terry Thomas biopic, I think again.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah.
He'd be good. Anything, or
do that.
What's the guy's name? Dick Dastardly from Wacky Races.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah, Dick Dastardly. Yeah, we'll get, CGI Muttley.
Yeah.
Another franchise for him.
Yeah, I think Jack will definitely have more to do, and it might be interesting to see if that character isn't what we think he is. I think you're right. They are very much neon sign pointing him. He is literally the mustache twirling villain. So maybe he's not. Maybe there is going to be a bit of a twist there. He is in that Fraction comic. I won't say what role he plays in that Fraction comic, but he is from there. So I think anyone who has read it might have an idea maybe of where Jack's going, but it'll be interesting to see if they do it, yeah. All right, well, I think we've covered Never Meet Your Heroes in good form. So let's take a short break, Dan, and when we come back, we'll talk about the second episode, Hide and Seek. Hey, everyone, this is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you're currently listening to, you've just listened to, or you're just about to listen to. We'd love to keep the lights on a bit longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights on our website and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This Talent Pool on podcasting, popular culture, and you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis to get the ball rolling. Thanks for listening. All right, welcome back, guys. We're here talking about the second episode of Hawkeye Hide and Seek now, which was written by Eliza Lomnitz-Clement, and it was directed by Rhys Thomas again. So, yeah, in this episode, we've obviously had the cliffhanger of Never Meet Your Heroes, saw Clint and Kate come together, and this episode sort of follows them as they begin the journey to firstly sort of escape the situation they were in. You know, you've had the auction in the auction house, the Ronin suit, which is being coveted. They've got the tracksuit mafia, all the Russian guys, talking bro, hey bro, doing all that, chasing them. And they have to sort of come together and then they sort of go on a mission to try and get the suit back and protect themselves. So, again, what were your general thoughts about this second episode, Dan, and what would you score it out of 10?
I watched them both one after the other, so in some ways they've blended together in my mind. But I think ultimately the second half I think was less good for me. Mainly because I didn't like a certain aspect that happened with the LARPing thing. Didn't quite work for me with that.
We'll get into that.
But it took up quite a sizable chunk of the story, and I was a bit kind of cold on that, to be honest. But it was still a good episode. I'd probably give it 7 out of 10, so just like half a star less than before. But I think everyone's going to watch these in either a binge of the whole lot very quickly, or at least the first two you watch in one go, really, don't you? They were both released together, so I see it more as like a long episode than the two different ones in a sense. But I think it was slightly not as interesting to me, but still had some good moments, and I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, I'd agree. If I went for a 7 for the last one, I'd probably go for maybe a 6.5 to a 7 here. I think it was still good, very solid, enjoyable stuff. It's a natural progression. It's like you say, it is essentially one long story. I mean, it's a 6-part continuing narrative. It's going to be set over a short time frame, I think, because it's something like 6 days before Christmas, and Clint is trying to get back to his family by that point. So it's all going to be set in a very compressed time frame, much like a movie would be. So in a way, I think it's going to play, once it's all said and done, like a 6-hour movie, really, like a 6-part movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we've seen with a lot of these other Marvel shows previously, and it's whether or not they will continue in this vein, or we will get to a point where you get shows that are a little bit more spaced out, standalone-y, whereas Hawkeye isn't going to be that. It's this one condensed story. Because it is the idea that, you know, as we talked about earlier, how, you know, Black Widow eventually got a film. For years, there were people wondering, well, will Hawkeye get a film? All the rest of them have had a film. You know, even the Hulk had a film before they started to not figure out how to make a Hulk film, which, you know, although there are rumors now that they're talking about trying to do Planet Hulk or World War Hulk, I think, which, you know, I really hope they do, because they would be fantastic to adapt. But, you know, Hawkeye's really been the only character who hasn't had his own solo project, and he's just popped up in all these other things. So It is a little bit like, well, in theory, you could have had a Hawkeye movie earlier and it'd be a bit more of a generic thing, I suppose. So I guess it makes sense that this is a continuing, ongoing story that is the TV series equivalent of a Hawkeye movie.
And I think that's better, really, because the Black Widow film was, you know, I mean, we podcasted about that, and at the time, because I'd literally only seen it a day or two before we podcasted, and I was quite positive about it, and I still don't think it's terrible or anything, but in the months since, I've definitely looked back and thought, okay, maybe it's not as great as I originally had thought. There's a few things that have dragged it down a little bit. And I think that would have benefited from being a series, to be honest. The story it was telling there kind of would have suited 6 episodes. So in a way, I think Jeremy Renner, he probably didn't get paid as much as Scarlett Johansson.
No.
But I think creatively, I think it's probably best to have this amount of time to really delve into his character. So I think he'll end up with a better project than the Black Widow film.
Yeah, I do. I think on the evidence of this, I agree. I think it will be a more assured, solid piece of work. There's been a lot of positivity around these first two episodes that people have seen. And generally, I think there's been a lot of positivity about the MCU series for the most part to date. But I definitely think more people have come out of these first two more psyched about the series than they did maybe the first two of Falcon and Winter Soldier. And maybe even the first few What Ifs. Because What If, I think, ended up being... I kind of think What If fizzled out a little bit. I think those first few episodes were popular and did quite well. But I don't know if it really maintained it. And I think that show went very, very, very deep dive cosmic by the end. And I don't think necessarily that people might have expected it to do that. You know, it certainly took us a little bit by surprise. I think in our discussion forums about quite what they did in the last couple of episodes of What If, we were like, surely this is like movie stuff in 2 years. Like, what? How are you doing this now? So I think fans actually surprisingly respond to either stories that are quite easy to pass and aren't too complicated, or characters that are really compelling. I think that's one of the reasons why WandaVision did so well, because I think there was a real investment in Wanda and Vision as characters. And even though that was a mystery and it was a strange story that then unfurled over time, and yes, it became more Marvel generic as it went on, it still was quite strange and different within the context of the MCU. And there was real investment in that romance and that story. Again, with Loki, there is a huge amount of Loki fandom out there who, even though Loki, frankly, was a little bit all over the place and a bit hit and miss in terms of what it did, you know, it still came loaded with a huge amount of expectation. Probably the show, I would say, this year, the most anticipated because of Tom Hiddleston and that role. So Hawkeye is sort of in the middle, I think. It's not, because it's not too weighted down with too many things, I think fans have come at it with quite a spring in its step. And the trailer promoted it as a bit of a breezy Christmas romp. And I think people have approached it in that way. And also, Hawkeye isn't necessarily, but on the flip side, Hawkeye isn't necessarily a big shining star of a character. And in fact, and we'll talk about it, but that's part of what is discussed in this episode. I think that, you know, the show seems to understand that itself. So I just think it's interesting, the placement that it has, and that maybe that because the expectations haven't been mega high, in a way, the response has been quite good so far.
Yeah. I think there's always a risk of Marvel fatigue, isn't there? Even for the big major fans. So, you know, there's always a sense that you've got to go into these things and you have to have done your homework already, or you have to have watched at least the last 5 films in a row, or somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, right, you need to watch these, and gives you a list of ones that you need to watch to prepare for something. It always seems like the longer it goes on, it becomes more of a complicated universe. And so it's very difficult to know how to approach it as somebody who's like a casual fan, you know, because, you know, obviously we're doing a podcast about this, so the people who listen to this are all like probably bigger fans than me and you know, to be honest.
Yeah.
So probably. We're probably coming across as like imbeciles in some of the comments we're making. But I think that's good though to talk about it in from a more of a general casual fan view, because that's probably the bulk of the audience. So I think something like Hawkeye already seems to be more accessible, because you're meeting, you know, Kate Bishop, you know, as well, you know, it's a new character for everyone. And like you say, it's a very grounded, very normal series. All you really need to have any awareness of is the Avengers film, really, maybe for some context, as with the musical that happened in the first episode. Just the idea that Hawkeye is part of the Avengers and he's a superhero, you maybe need to know that. But apart from that, you can almost just jump into this and enjoy it on its own merits and not really have to be much of a Marvel fan, you could argue.
Yeah. I think that will appeal. I think you're right. I think there is a broad consensus of audience who are churning on Disney Plus, and they're not going to be weighted down with all the knowledge and all the. They might have watched most of the MCU, but they might not be super up on where everybody is and where they are and what's going on at one time. So I think something like Hawkeye, I think he's definitely going to appeal on that from that perspective. And I think it comes at it with that kind of relaxed sensibility. I mean, I found Renner in these first two episodes oddly muted in a way. And I think that might be the point in some ways in how he's playing Hawkeye, as somebody who's just a bit tired and a bit fed up of it all. And he just wants to, you know, live a quiet life with his family. And I think the story might bring him a little bit more out of himself. But I think at the same time, it's because the approach is quite relaxed. And that's why I quite like... I mean, what did you think of the dynamic with him and Kate here? Because obviously, certainly the first half of the episode has them together quite a lot, you know, out there. And then they sort of come back to it together at the very end as well. And they will spend most of the series together, I imagine. But, like, he's very much in this episode keen to get away from her. You know, she obviously is in his thrall because he's her favourite superhero of all time. She hero worships him. And he doesn't really know what to do with that. And he gets to a point where he's like, okay, well, this is it. I'm helping you a bit. I'm off. I'll never see you again. See you later. Bye.
Yeah.
What did you think of their dynamic? Do you think it worked? Do you think those beats were entertaining and good?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always a fan of, you know, like buddy cop kind of things. And, you know, Winter Soldier and Falcon were two characters as well that they kind of did that with, didn't they, in their series. They tried to set it up as they were like opposing kind of people. It didn't quite work for me, that one. So I don't know if those characters had really ever been set up to be particularly opposite in any meaningful way. So it didn't quite work for me. But these characters, Hawkeye and Kate, are definitely opposites in terms of age, gender, and just that their kind of attitude, really. Yeah, because like you say, she's a super fan of him. He's very humble and doesn't really like that. He probably still views her as the equivalent of the guy who approached him in the toilets asking for a signature. To him, she's just another one of those kind of people, you know, but she's kind of got caught up in something that he has to help her with, and he's just kind of going about it because he's a nice guy. He's not gonna you know just let her fend for herself. So he's kind of but he's very kind of automatic, isn't he? He's very kind of just doing this out of, you know, a sense of you know, he can't kind of like leave her and abandon her. He has to kind of help her out in some way, but he's kind of just coming in and doing it almost by instinct. And he's trying to like maintain some kind of distance from her, isn't he? So he doesn't get too caught up with it. You know, he could just kind of drop in, help her and go home. You know, but he makes the mistake, I suppose, of giving her his number. so straight away she's got that link to him. And it just, you know, I'm sure over the next few episodes they'll kind of get closer and more involved in each other and each person's story. And so, and by the end, I'm guessing that there'll be like a great double act, and maybe she'll be the replacement for Natasha that he needs, because obviously the first episode was a bit like about him feeling the loss of her when he noticed her character being played on stage in the musicals. Maybe he's kind of after another best friend. And so maybe he'll find it in her by the end.
Yeah, that's a nice way of looking at it. Because, I mean, on one level, that you might say that she would fill a sort of daughter role, but he already has a daughter. You know, he's already got the children. He doesn't need that. She is looking for a father figure, for sure. Mm. You know, that's all part of the rebellion about Jack, is that she's not happy about having this father figure she doesn't trust with Jack, even though Ellie wants, her mum wants her to have him and trust in him, because she's been... maybe hoodwinked, presumably hoodwinked by him, and Kate can see through that. But with Hawkeye, it's this, I think it's starting as a hero worship, you know, I saw you in action, you know, you're amazing, I want to be you. And it will grow into a, you're the dad I never had, you know, you're that father figure. And he will see in her the Natasha, that person who he can trust, you know, as well. And it will grow into a mentor relationship with that. That's a nice way of looking at it. And I hope it does, because I think they have good chemistry. And I'd happily, on the basis of their chemistry and their dynamic, I could watch a few seasons of this, even though I don't necessarily think that this show is going to be a multi-season show. And maybe not, maybe it will. I've said that about Loki, and look at that, you know, that's coming back. But I think there is mileage potentially in that kind of relationship. And pairing Hawkeye with a strong character in that way, I think will work well for him. As a character as well. And I'd be happy to say, I think that's a really nice way of looking at it. And on the evidence of this, I think that's definitely could be where they're going. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Natasha was always like somebody who's very similar to him, and they've got a bit of a friendly rivalry going on. So it's just a nice dynamic to have him be the mentor, the father figure to somebody younger. It's just a bit of a different, it's a nice change, isn't it? So I think it kind of works well. Yeah. So I think ultimately these first two episodes, I think the positivity that we have for them is all down to those characters and the chemistry, really. We're talking about plot and other things happening, but, you know, stuff like the tracksuit mafia and all this, I mean, it's interesting and it's there, but it hasn't really gone anywhere yet. I think we're really interested in the series because of those two characters. So I think that's where the success has been so far, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think I appreciate the idea of Clint as a reluctant hero, because they don't always play this beat in that way in Marvel. And I've always loved the reluctant hero story. You know, my favourite reluctant hero is Kurt Russell's Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China, yeah. Which I love that film. And he just wants to get back to his truck. Like, he can't be doing with all this cosmic weirdness with wizards and ancient China and all this. He's like, I just want to get back to my truck and carry on with my day. And I love that. And I think, and that's Clint. Clint just wants to get back to his family. I don't want to be part of it. I'm done. And he's just getting drawn in. And then I think you will see him become more playful and lighter throughout this show as he starts to actually, like at the end, he allows himself to be kidnapped by the Tracksuit Mafia, and he just then takes his hands up, and he's not handcuffed, and they're like, oh, bro, and he's like, look, can I just talk to your boss? You know, it's quite light and fluffy in a way that he hasn't always been, because he's been very, you know, ground down by all this darkness. So I like that, and I want to see that develop, I think, as the series goes on.
The only concern there for me is that, yeah, he didn't seem particularly bothered by the Tracksuit Mafia. Did he? He sort of viewed them as like, oh, they're just like some minor irritant, really. You know, he's gone to like an alien world and dealt with Thanos, and he's done these crazy big things. So these guys in tracksuits are not really a big deal. I don't know if that's like a good move or not on part of the show itself, because obviously they're meant to be the villains. So you'd like them to be somebody that the heroes fear in some way. But he does seem a bit blasé about it all, doesn't he, at the minute? So, but maybe with the introduction of their boss that we get at the end of this episode, maybe she'll be a bigger threat, and that's what makes him all of a sudden take the Tracksuit Mafia a bit more seriously, maybe? Because at the minute he's very much dismissive of them, isn't he? Not really taking them very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's part of the Marvel kind of thing, in that they're not very good at villains, are they? In some way, you know, aside from one or two examples, you know, Thanos, for example, who I think is a great villain in comic book history, most of the villains either end up becoming comic anti-heroes, like Loki is a good example, or they're just a bit rubbish, because in the end, the characters start taking the piss out of them. And they're kind of... That's why I think David Tennant was so powerful as Kilgrave, because he genuinely was awful, and he was horrible, and he was taken seriously. And that first season of Jessica Jones, I think he's terrific for that very reason. He was a nasty piece of work. And I think you don't always get that in a lot of these Marvel shows, particularly the MCU stuff. So you'd like to think that it will develop, and that and the character at the end of the episode will, you know, will actually be quite scary and be along the lines of that. Although, having said that, I have just realised who that character is, and that's not going to be what we get at all. So I don't want to spoil it. You probably don't know, do you, Dan? I would guess who this is.
Well, I'm saving some of my knowledge that I do have towards the end of this conversation.
Because, okay,
because she right. comes let, in at the end, so I was saving it. Yeah.
Let's put a pin in that, because it is a little bit more complicated. But maybe that will lead to a scarier villain in the long run. But you are right about the Tracksuit Mafia. They are treated just as jokey villains, aren't they? Jokey henchmen, and that can sometimes be a bit of a downside for the MCU.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it, because obviously the tone of the show is a bit kind of like that, isn't it? It's a bit more of a comedy, a bit more of a lark. But I just thought there was certain points where I thought, oh, it might have been better just to have these people make a bit more of an impact, so you were a bit more afraid for Hawkeye's life in that situation. So when Kate comes crashing through the ceiling, it's seen as a bit of a real downer, because how is he going to get out of this, because his backup's now been exposed and that didn't go to plan. But I was more just like, oh, well, another bit of comedy hijinks to throw on the fire. It's not really, I don't know. So, I mean, the whole tone of this was very, very light, but I did think it had elements of the Daredevil series from Netflix. So, and that show was obviously kind of taking place in the MCU, you know, not officially, but in a lot of ways it kind of was, and that managed the trick of being quite serious at times. You know, you had Kingpin slamming someone's head in the door, didn't you, and quite a brutal scene. You know, you can't quite imagine that happening in Hawkeye yet, but I would actually like some of that edginess to come into it a little bit. And I thought the Tracksuit Mafia were going to be characters who have got a silly name and they say bro all the time, they're a bit played for laughs, but then there would be like a bit of a twist, and it actually would be a scene where they actually are quite violent, and all of a sudden you did fear for Hawkeye's life a little bit, and maybe he kind of sat up and started taking things a bit more seriously. But maybe that will happen in the next episode. Maybe that's the kind of development that will happen.
Maybe. Side question for you here on what you've just said. Do you think if the rumours, and they are just rumours right now, if the rumours are true that Charlie Cox is in Spider-Man No Way Home as Matt Murdock, and they are potentially going to drip feed Daredevil back into the MCU, do you think they could easily sort of, not quite retcon, because it is technically set in the MCU, and that we have seen things in that, you know, Marvel Netflix universe that suggest it is. Do you think they could easily sort of port those three seasons of Daredevil into the story of the MCU and theoretically do season four of Daredevil, but incorporate some of this kind of Hawkeye stuff? You know, let's just say the character at the end of this series would very much fit in a Daredevil story. The end of this episode, sorry, who we just mentioned, would fit in a Daredevil story. Yeah. Do you think it would work? Do you think they could do it?
Yeah, because now you've got the multiverse, haven't you? So you could just say, you could just introduce Kingpin and Daredevil back into the MCU and say, you know, I don't know if you'd be able to say this like within the show itself, but in terms of the PR that they've put out, they could just say, well, look, it's basically those characters from the Netflix shows with a few changes. So just think of them as being like from a slightly different dimension, different universe. They're part of the multiverse. So the ones that you were watching on Netflix, they existed in the world that was like 99% the same as the MCU.
Yeah.
But there was little differences here and there, and so so those characters are now in the MCU. But you know, funnily enough, there's no Iron Fist; he doesn't exist. And you know, a few little tweaks, you know, things that they can kind of pick and choose. You know,
and I like then, that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense to you? So they could have it and say, well, basically all of that happened, but here and there you might notice a few little changes. Like definitely, if we ever talk about the boss character at the end, the connection that she has to Kingpin is not something that was in the Netflix shows. But
no.
So maybe that would just be something that they can say, well, in this universe, that does exist with Kingpin.
I would love that. I actually think they absolutely could make that work now, and they could put all those shows on Disney Plus. And, you know, because there is some really... I mean, there are some duff seasons, but there is some really good content. Like you say, that first... You know, first... Certainly the first season of Daredevil is very good. The first season of Jessica Jones is very good. I personally loved the second season of Luke Cage. I thought that was excellent. And a lot of people love the first season of that as well. I wasn't as in love with that. But a lot of that content is great. And you could very easily port those characters and those actors, who are all very good, into these shows, into this universe. So fingers crossed, because something like Hawkeye could absolutely open the door for that to actually fit and work and make sense. Mm-hmm. And I think so many people would be over the moon if that happened, but we'll see. I'm sure we'll there's see. Lots of things on the table. Yeah, we'll see. But to get back to Hawkeye, because I could go off into real excitement territory with all this, but you know, to get back to Hawkeye, I think you mentioned that you weren't a fan of the LARP sequence. So obviously Hawkeye then goes off to look for the Ronin suit, which has been stolen from the burned down apartment, which the tracksuit mafia burned down Kate's apartment. The Ronin suit is nicked. It then ends up with a LARPer in the middle of this live-action role-play fantasy sort of setting. And so Hawkeye goes off to try and get this back. What was it about this sequence that didn't track for you?
Well, I think, in general, the whole Ronin suit thing in that whole storyline is... You know, it's difficult with us talking about the first two episodes, because by the end of this whole series, you might look back and think, oh, okay, it did make sense. But as of right now, I don't quite get why Clint's so keen to get the suit back. Because surely that would just be a symbol of a dark time that he'd rather forget. So I don't quite see why it has any relevance, unless it was like in some way a danger if it got into the wrong hands. I don't know, you know, it seems to be fireproof, so maybe that's a big deal or something, I don't know. But, you know, it seems to be like, if it was something where it was like, oh, you don't want that suit going to the wrong person because it's got magical properties or something, it would make more sense. But
yeah,
because it's just a suit, and I don't know where he got it, maybe there's a story to that, maybe it has some kind of value in terms of, you know, the sentimental value or something, I don't know. But from what I know of that suit, it was just a suit that he wore, wasn't it? And you know, it doesn't really... symbolize anything important or good in his life, so I just don't see why he's after it. So that whole aspect of this episode I didn't quite get. And then the way it kind of like feeds off into being this story where it was one of the firemen stole it, which I don't quite get, but I suppose he's a LARPer, so maybe he saw that and thought, well, that would be a good thing to wear for my LARPing in Central Park or wherever it was. So maybe that makes sense. It's a bit odd that happened, but okay, so our fireman stole it, all right. And then, but then you actually have Hawkeye go off and have to pretend to be a LARPer, and that was all kind of played for laughs, because obviously he's a trained killer, so he could easily dispatch these people for real, you know, with no real thought, but he has to pretend to, you know, go along with it, and just, you know, so it was all very much played for like a bit of comedy that didn't really land on it. I wasn't really finding it very funny, and I wasn't really attached to the reasoning behind it or what was really going on. And then the fireman starts to say, oh, you know, can you let me kill you, because that would make me feel like a hero. Well, he's a fireman, so doesn't he never feel like a hero in real life?
That's true.
So I think that didn't quite track for me either. So I just thought it was like a weird 10 minutes or so in the middle where I don't really understand why it was there. But maybe we'll develop an understanding as to why that suit means such a lot in the future episodes. And you know, in retrospect, it would work a bit better for me. But I think they should have really explained that a bit earlier on as to why he was... You know, it made sense that, like, he saw somebody wearing the suit who was, like... You know, and the news was reporting it as, like, a big deal. Like, oh, the Ronin's back. And so it made sense that he'd be like, well, who's that person? And that he'd want to kind of investigate. But the moment he discovers that it's just some young girl... And as soon as he discovers that, well, it's kind of like, well, mystery over. Or do you mind giving me the suit back or whatever? And then that's the end of it. I don't quite understand why the whole suit thing went on into being a bigger part of the whole story. But I'm wrong in thinking that.
I don't know. No, they are. It's an absolutely a good question. And I think it's something that you won't be alone in asking. And if I hadn't done a little bit of pre-reading, I might be as confused. But there is a couple of things, I think, to talk about with this that might shed a bit of light. But they are things that haven't necessarily been explained in the show. So I think, to start with, I think that there might be, before I get into that, there might be the LARPing sequence. I agree in that it didn't quite work and it was played for laughs that weren't always there. But I liked it in the sense that it might track a little bit with what Hawkeye's thematic story is about, maybe him rediscovering who he is and what it means to be a hero in this context. Maybe you could look at this from the sense that when he goes into this LARPing, he sees all of these people who, like you say, have these perfectly good jobs, are heroes in a different context, but maybe don't see themselves in that way, in the way that they think Hawkeye does or Hawkeye should. You know, Kate at one point talks to him about branding, doesn't she? You know, she starts saying, you need a brand. You need to be like, you know, these guys who are like Thor or Iron Man, and they, you know, they've got the toys being done for them and all this kind of thing. You know, you don't brand yourself. You're just a dude. You're just a guy with a family who doesn't buy into this. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who would have groaned at that and thought, oh, well, the MCU would say that, wouldn't they? You know, Disney would say that because they're all about branding. But I think it's a good point about how Hawkeye is quite a low-key hero. No pun intended there for Tom Hiddleston's character. But he is like a, you know, quite a grounded hero who is... Who doesn't buy into that? And the character of Hawkeye isn't branded necessarily in the same way amongst fans of the MCU. So maybe the LARPing sequence is a way of trying to point out to him, Clint, that there are a lot of people out there who have hero worship for people like him, for good or worse. And, you know, MCU has tried to show the downsides and the dark sides of the kind of cosmic battles these guys have, whether it's the blip or whether it's Sokovia and all this kind of stuff and the aftermath of that, like in Civil War, for instance. But I think he's so haunted and downtrodden by everything they've gone through. And maybe part of why he wants that Ronin suit back is that and this isn't properly explained, you're right, but maybe it's part of his psychology that suit needs to be, it can't be out there because it's such a representation of a time he wants to put away, he wants to forget. Maybe he wants the suit back so he can just put it away and never think about it again because he's got these demons that he's trying to bury. But you're right, from a literal point of view, the only reason that suit is so important is that it gets him and Kate together in the plot, from a plot perspective, because there's no other way they would come together. And you're right, it hasn't fully been explained in story why that suit is so important. What I will say, and this is maybe where we should talk about who that person at the end is. Now, I'll preface this with maybe a slight spoiler warning, guys. If you really don't want to know who that person is before episode 3, presumably, maybe skip ahead a little bit, okay? And maybe we'll put a little bit of a note in the show notes as to where you're safe to listen to. But if you're not bothered, then that character is actually Echo, a.k.a. Maya Lopez, played by Alacqua Cox, who is quite an important character, certainly in comics and in Daredevil, actually. She has a very important arc in Daredevil. She has a big link to the Kingpin, and she was the first person in Marvel comic lore to be the Ronin with that suit, with that character. So it could be that Echo was in some way, her identity was stolen by Hawkeye when he became Ronin in Endgame, or something happened to her family, or something happened to someone she cared about, and she wants that suit to reclaim who she was, or for some reason. And maybe Hawkeye knows this. Maybe Clint knows this.
Yeah, okay. So in a way then, it's going to make us realise that maybe Clint stole the identity of Ronin. So he was never the original Ronin, is that
maybe
what you're trying to say? So maybe Ronin existed before Endgame. He kind of got the better of Echo in some way, stole the suit, went off and almost pretended to be her. So in a way, he was, is that what you're saying? So we'll learn that actually,
yeah, maybe
she's Ronin, he stole it, and there's a bit of a twist. Yeah.
It could be. And now that's pure speculation. That's not a spoiler, as in that's what happens. That is my guesswork based on what I've read, what I know. So that might explain. But you're right. It's not in this episode and it is an open question. So I don't blame you asking. What do you think about my idea there about the psychological reason Hawkeye might, and that LARP sequence? What do you think? Am I on the right track there? Do you think that's rubbish? Or what's your take on what I've just said there?
Well, about wanting it because it represents a dark time.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you take away the Echo stuff from a psychological point of view, and the reason that they put him in that LARP situation, do you think there's any merit to that, or do you just think it's there for a joke?
I don't know. It's one of those things. I don't know what to think of it, really. And I think we need just like a few more episodes, because I think it's probably I'm just attacking something that needs to be explained in the future. And to make it work better for me. But I can understand what you're saying there, is that what it represents. So he wants it off the streets. Or even like you were saying, if it is the fact that he stole that suit, so he's just thinking that maybe he was thinking that the original Ronin, he thought that was Echo on the news, back to her old tricks or something. Maybe that's what it was. So when he pulled the mask off, the reveal that it was Kate was a surprise to him, because he thought it would be Echo, maybe. So
Well, he did say, "Who the hell are you?" didn't he? Actually,
yeah.
When he first does that. So maybe he was expecting Echo under that suit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because who would he be expecting? To say that implies that he thought he would be seeing somebody else when he took the hood off. Yeah, I don't know. So it's just one of those things, I think, at the minute. I'm just, I'll give it some more time, see what happens.
No, but like I say, I think they're all fair questions, because it isn't fully there. And it's part of the mystery that we don't know is a mystery, in a way. It's sort of... You know, you have to, and this is where I think some people would find it frustrating, because I only know this because I've read up and I've read a little bit of the Echo stuff in comic form before. Not that I've read this story about the Ronin, but I've read about that from, you know, articles and such. So it's, you know, I've gone and filled in a bit of the research gaps, but not everyone's going to do that, and quite rightly. So if it's not explained in show, then it will be a problem. Hopefully in the next episode, we might get a bit more context for this, and we might get a few explanations that might back up some of this theorizing. So I would say now, this is where you're safe to listen, guys. I'll stop talking about what I've just talked about. So come back to us. Yeah, so for more, if you want to find out a bit more, go back the last few minutes. But episode 3 might provide a few more explanations there. But what do you think about everything else then that happens with Kate as the episode goes on? So she goes back, obviously, and she has the fencing match with Jack, and she's clashing a lot with her mom, Ellie, who she feels is completely in his thrall. And we talked a little bit about it in the last episode, didn't we? But like in the earlier discussion, but that Jack is being primed maybe to not be what we think he is. Do you think that the role Vera Farmiga is playing works well in terms of her relationship with Kate? Is that a good familial dynamic? Is this interesting drama, you know, for the show to be doing?
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of Eleanor at the minute. I really like Vera Farmiga as an actress, so I'm sure she would have got involved if this character was going to be a very interesting one, or at least have a good arc for her to play. But so at the minute, I'm a bit confused by her, because she doesn't seem too fussed, does she, when Kate comes back and she's kind of you know, got into trouble at school. She didn't seem too fussed about any of that. She kind of destroyed that clock tower. She didn't seem very bothered about that. She didn't seem to be that bothered that her daughter doesn't seem to like her new fiancé either. She didn't seem to be that concerned about that. And maybe you would be if you'd want a blessing, wouldn't you, of your child, if you were thinking of marrying this guy. And it seems to be a bit out of nowhere, doesn't it, in general, that she's now marrying this person. So there's something there, like another mystery that's going to be revealed slowly. But so at the minute, I'm not too sure what to make of Eleanor. I'm beginning to suspect that she's more the villain than him, than Jack. And we're obviously being pointed in the direction of Jack's the baddie. And I do know a little bit about, again, with a bit of Googling, I've kind of got a few little leads with Eleanor as to where it may be going. But I think you're definitely meant to possibly start suspecting that she's the one who's killed her husband, is the feeling I'm getting. And that she I'm thinking that she killed him during the Battle of New York and blamed it on that battle. But really, she kind of chucked him off the edge of tipped him off of a building or something. And so she's responsible for that.
Well, that's a point, because my wife, when we were watching it, said, where did she go? Like, you know, she suddenly reappears after all the explosions happened. Dad's dead. And she's like, where was she? And then suddenly she...
Yeah.
So you're bound to be right there, that they'll go back to that and you'll see her push him off a building or something.
Yeah.
She obviously has got... Something's going on with her and Simon Callow's dead Armand Duquesne as well, isn't there? Because there was that sequence that Kate sees where Armand's maybe blackmailing her or something's going on. And and there's a hushed conversation. It sounds like she's... And then he's dead soon after. So did she kill him? Is she involved? So there's a big mystery there as to what... So there are hints that maybe she is actually a bit of a villainess here and they're lining this up.
Yeah, I think we're going in that direction, aren't we? And so by the end, maybe she'll find a new dad in Hawkeye and she'll lose her mother, and that'll be the kind of development.
Maybe. And maybe Kate will sort of become an adopted Barton child some ways. You know, and that she'll find her mother in... what's Hawkeye's wife's name again? Linda Cardellini's character. I can't remember her name.
Her name is Linda Cardellini. That's how everyone refers to her as.
Should we just call her Linda? Yeah.
Hawkeye's wife, yeah.
Hawkeye's wife, yeah. I think she might, become that sort of mother figure. Laura Barton.
Laura
I have Barton, just looked. Yeah. I have just looked it up. I have just looked it up on IMDb. so maybe that would make sense, wouldn't it? On a thematic basis, I think for the way this is all going. Yeah, I can see that.
I think the last episode it'll have Christmas dinner and it will be all the Bartons and it will have Kate there around the table. That's my prediction.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I suppose that's the question. Where's it going to go? I mean, we've got some theories there. We've got some ideas. I mean, how do you think, because this isn't so much a spoiler, because it's sort of been pre-announced, really, but that Florence Pugh is going to appear as Yelena Belova from Black Widow, you know, Scarlett Johansson's, Natasha's sister, quote-unquote sister. And obviously we saw at the end of Black Widow in the post-credit sequence that Val, the sinister Val, has told Yelena to kill Hawkeye. So... how do we think this is going to cut? Is she going to come in? Does this all going to lead back to Julia Louis-Dreyfus? You know, maybe are they lurking in the background? You know, how do you think this might all factor in?
Yeah, well, she's like the evil Nick Fury.
Yeah.
For the TV shows, so she kind of like wanders in occasionally. Yeah. Well, she might turn up, but I think obviously, definitely Yelena's going to turn up. I think that's kind of almost been revealed, isn't it, as happening. So, I mean, she's obviously from Russia, so the Tracksuit Mafia are a Russian gang, aren't they? So maybe there's like a obvious connection there. I mean, I'm aware as well that the character at the end has a certain skill set that seems very similar to Taskmaster to me. So maybe there'll be a connection there with maybe a similar training or background to the Taskmaster character. Will be introduced as a bit of a change, and maybe that will somehow link back to Yelena, so Yelena will know that character. But there's definitely a Russian connection of some kind, so it's kind of easy to see how she might slip into this, almost as like a different storyline coming in, because she won't have any idea what's going on otherwise. She'll just be there to kill Hawkeye.
Or will he go and find her for help? Because maybe he knows her. Maybe in that interim time, or maybe he always knew her, you know? Maybe there was a point where... in the interim time between her death and now, he knows her and they go to her for help, and he doesn't realise that she's out, got a contract to kill him, and there might be some, Who knows? Mm. I mean, there could be... That might make more sense than her just dropping into it out of nowhere. It's hard to say, isn't it? We don't know at this stage. We don't know exactly when she's going to come into it for how long. But, yeah, it'll be... I'm interested to see potentially how that might track with his grief over Natasha and what happened in Endgame and how that might help him resolve that as part of him moving on from some of this. Because obviously, I mean, we're all expecting that him and Yelena are going to have a scrap, are going to have a fight, and in the end, they're going to work together. I mean, that's pretty much, I think, what most people are imagining. Because Yelena's not going to turn out to be a bad guy, probably certainly. She's in with the bad guys now. She's not going to be one in the long run.
Yeah, Yelena's the Black Widow replacement, and Kate Bishop's the Hawkeye replacement. So I think those two characters are going to get together, and that's the... They're like the future of those characters, in a sense.
Yeah, that's all to come. I mean, is there anything else with Hide and Seek then that you want to mention? Anything else that stood out to you in this episode that's worthy of discussion or that was particularly interesting?
I like that this is six episodes because I think with the Netflix shows in particular, they were always a bit longer and there was always filler episodes. But I already feel that we're really kind of cracking along. There's no kind of filler material happening. I mean, the LARPing thing maybe for me was a bit of a random thing that happened that slowed it down a little bit for me, but apart from that, it seems to be really focused. I quite like the idea that we're already almost at the halfway point, really, aren't we? By next week we'll be halfway through it already, so I like that sense of pace. I think Jeremy Renner's getting some good stuff to do here, so interesting to see what happens there. And just basically I like the dynamic between those two characters, and I think now the next two episodes are going to be all about like the situation, really what's really happening to these two, and I think a lot of that will kind of kick in, and hopefully then we'll be hooked into the story more than we are the characters.
I agree, I think there's a few more elements to come into play that might make this even more compelling. But I think it's a good start. I think it's a really solid start. It's introduced everything well. It feels quite confident and assured. It's quite relaxed at the same time and quite breezy. It's good. And I hope if it can continue this momentum and it can continue this consistent approach, I think this might quietly be one of the best TV shows so far, actually. I really do, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it develops and what it might then trigger off, as always, and where it might lead to. And, you know, one of the reasons I think we all like watching and talking about the MCU is because we like the idea that it all is leading to all these different paths and all these different characters, and that's part of the fun of it. So, it's been good to dissect it with you, Dan. Thanks for coming on and joining me for this first couple of episodes. It's been great.
Yeah, I'll be listening to future episodes, see what everyone else thinks as we go through. That's a strange thing, isn't it? We're covering a series that I won't be involved now for the rest of this podcast, but I'll kind of listen in and see what everyone else thinks. Maybe everyone's got similar theories as to what we've presented, but I'm sure you'll get more information as we go through. So it's interesting to see where things end up and see how correct we were and what the broad kind of picture is of this.
Yeah, and you know, you say you might not, you won't be back, but you never know. Like we often we're often chopping and changing things. Sometimes you have Hawkeye style come to the rescue, or like Kate Bishop, you've dropped him from a ceiling. You know, sometimes to help. So
with a bit more finesse, hopefully.
But yeah, thank you for doing this. Yeah, it's great. It's always great to talk to you, and particularly about the MCU. You know, we've had a couple of good chats so far, so hopefully this won't be our last one. You know, you'll be, I'm sure, back, if not for Hawkeye, then for some of the future stuff in 2022 that's coming up, so hopefully we'll get to chat again on here with that. So cheers. So so obviously I mentioned at the start that you're the editor of framerated.co.uk. do you want to tell everyone a little bit more about that and where they can find you if they want to dig into a bit more, Dan?
We'll go there. Yeah, obviously write some TV film reviews there with another bunch of people. So lots of content there, not just from me. But if you want to just follow my things, then obviously probably best to follow me on Twitter. So just go to Twitter there and follow me on at DanOwen79. You can see everything that I produce there, including these podcasts.
Yeah, great stuff. It's all good. Frame rate, it's great. So do check it out, guys. Check out Dan's writing, because it's excellent. And you can find me at AJ Black Writer, and my website, ajblackwriter.com, and me overall on the We Made This podcast network at WMT_network. So make sure you check me out on those things and see what else I'm up to. And I will hopefully be back next week to talk about episode 3, actually, as host. And then there's going to be a few other people taking over as we head towards the end. And then hopefully I'll be back for episode 6 as well to wrap it all up. But we'll see. We'll see how these things go. But thank you for now for joining us for another episode. And remember, we're part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to Podcast 616, which you can find on Twitter, by the way, at Podcast 616. And give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Hawkeye, though, is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in just a moment. But we'll see you next time on Podcast 616. And until then, just keep trying to hit that bullseye.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Chucky Vision.
I've been on some Chucky forums, and there is a lot of hate about Chucky being woke, having a homosexual agenda, how it's ruined the franchise by making it too gay. And I'm like, really? How can you possibly suggest that it's ruined the franchise by being too gay when Seed of Chucky is a thing?
And even if people, like, I know some people, like, I mean, Seed of Chucky is quite a debatable film, but like, even Bride is very camp. People should have known the sensibilities of this franchise ages ago.
Free with this month's issue.
The editor, Mark Sutherland, who's a cunt.
A notorious man.
Yeah, he's the man that ran the magazine into the ground. He opens the issue with a really fucking cringy editor's letter.
Oh yeah, he does.
Which says, for the first 8 months of the year, the alternative nation was depressed. UK garage and pop shite was ruling the charts, and our music was being pushed off the airwaves and common room stereos across the land.
Oh Jesus.
Now I looked into the alternative music scene of the first 8 months of 2000. Already released that year, there had been Primal Scream's Exterminator, Blood Flowers by The Cure, Suicide Pact You First by Therapy.
Movieversaries.
The highest grossing film in the case of Avatar. I don't think anybody ever considers it popular, but everybody saw it, which is really weird. It's this strange case of this film that made so much money, pushed special effects forward so much, and it isn't based on any intellectual property. Not directly anyway, but it has zero cultural footprint. Nobody talks about it.
Yeah, apart from the whole visual thing, right? Like, yeah. You know, like it's impossibly mediocre. It is so middle of the road. like it's not even bad enough to be spoken about.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.